I should, however, be back on Wednesday, March the 31st. So, Lord willing, unless you hear otherwise, then you plan on a meeting 7 o'clock, but then what you'll do is continue what we have been doing. In other words, the spiritual formation of the nation, and of course Marian Catechist. One major development that I may have shared with you is that Vatican official who is now in charge of catechetics, or has been, in the Congregation of the Clergy, Cardinal Sanchez, Jose Sanchez, he's coming to the United States on the 28th of June. He'll be here until the 4th of July. He is speaking at the National Shrine on the morning of the 3rd of July, which is a Saturday, and then in the afternoon for the convention of the homeschooling parents. What I would like to do before that time is inform him of what kind of people we have, what your background is, something about a short resume. And because, as I told you, the plan for the Marian Ignatian Catechist is not any idea that I might have about what you people ought to do, about what does the Holy See want. That's the way, over the years, I have been operating. That's my vow of obedience to the Holy Father. And we could have a meeting depending on his schedule and also your own. It will be, of course, in Washington, but the plan is of now is that he would be coming into the United States on the 28th of June, the 29th, 30th, 1st, 2nd, 3rd of July. In fact, I'll be faxing two letters to him tomorrow, because we are in contact on a regular basis. And what this will do, I think, is make you realize that we're not just talking in the abstract. The needs, as you know, are immense for the churches, both evangelization, where so many missionaries, I don't know the figures, but I would say that since the Vatican Council, the Catholic Church has lost up to 50% of all their missionaries. And one reason, of course, is the secularization of so many religious communities, the scarcity of vocations of the priesthood, the kind of training which so many priests have been getting in their seminaries, and then also ideas, which of course are also behind secularization. You do not, as Karl Rahner for years taught, that we should not try to convert non-Christians to Christianity. He coined the phrase and wrote extensively on what he called anonymous Christians. If Hindus remain good Hindus, Muslims remain good Muslims. Imagine St. Paul, imagine him allowing such a nasty thought to stay in his mind. That, by the way, is why we are here. Because the faith must go on, and somebody must do the evangelizing. As a catechesis, it's an open secret, the condition of catechetics in a country like ours. At any rate, what we'll meet then, Lord willing, on what day is it? The March the
31st.
Okay. And unless you hear otherwise, but I don't think I will be held up, because there are, by the way, let me tell you, once people know you're in a certain part of the country, there are people in the vicinity want to hear. This is for all of us. Not because of me, it's the truth. The truth is magnetically attractive. So, now I believe for today, we had, if I'm mistaken, the 29th and 30th, am I correct?
Yes.
29th and 30th. Today, the theme is contemplation for divine love. First of all, something about the logic coming to the end of the exercises by concentrating on what Ignatius calls contemplation for divine love. As you remember, the exercises are built on four unequal periods called weeks. The first week, somebody bring a chair over. It would be better if you got a little closer, if you wouldn't mind, please. As conceived by St. Ignatius, the essence of the exercises consists in four periods of meditation. The first considering our purpose of existence in our own sins along with the sins of the human race. And the purpose then of the first week is to make sure that the person is ready to go beyond the first week. St. Ignatius says, the one directing the exercises should carefully scrutinize whether the person making the exercises is really ready for going beyond the first week. And that means, does the person have the grace? And secondly, does the person have the generosity? Because the first part of the retreat, called the first week, builds only on the essentials of non-merely Christianity, but the essentials of even revealed religion. In other words, God made us that we might praise, honor, and serve Him in this life and reach heaven in the lives to come. And the whole concentration of the first week is on sin and its consequences. Now then, the second week, and I repeat, this is the dividing line. Those who have both the grace and the generosity to go on, then begin to reflect not on how to avoid hell and reach heaven, but rather what does Christ want of me? And there is not a question of avoiding sin or its consequences, but rather of joining Christ in His, and we have to use the word, His military campaign to conquer the whole world for His Heavenly Father. And then only certain people, as presumed, only certain people have the necessary grace to go beyond the first week. And as you see, we've assumed that you have the grace. However, the three last weeks, to give them that name, are the exercises. Not to find out whether I've got the grace, whether I have the vocation. In the language of the church, to have a vocation means to be called to go beyond what must be done to save one soul. Consequently, to go already into the second week presumes that I believe I have the grace. What I don't know is, do I have the generosity? Now, given that perspective, you see immediately the meditation on the kingdom of Christ, which opens the second week. The focus is on ourselves, to keep asking ourselves, in the light of my past life, that is very important, in the light of my past life, having been, to say the least, not as faithful as I should have been. It's a very safe statement, I know for one person. Then, what am I willing to do for Christ? Not only in compensation, but, as St. Paul tells us, and he knew, where sin has abounded, notice past tense, their grace will even more abound, future tense. The more people offended God, the less faithful we have been, the more sinners, to coin an expression, we have been. We have the Holy Spirit's own guarantee, the more grace will be given to us. But watch this. It's not the grace of conversion. That's supposed to be taken care of by the end of the first week. No, it's rather the grace that we can depend on to cooperate with Christ in the extension of His kingdom. Then, the second week concentrates, the longest part of the exercises, concentrates on Christ's life, especially His public ministry, so that even as Christ, who is the living God, became man in order to proclaim the truth to a sinful world so that the world might be saved. Being God, He could have He healed the world without anybody's cooperation. But no, in here, there are two kinds of cooperation that God not needs, but requires. Cooperation by each individual. Each individual using his or free will to cooperate with the grace of God. That's cooperation number one. But cooperation number two is what we might call collective or communal cooperation. Well, in other words, not only does God want us to cooperate with His grace, but He wants human beings to be the channels of His grace to others with which then they can cooperate. Now, the second kind of cooperation is what is really the end point of the spiritual exercises that I'm going to cooperate with Christ, not just with His grace, so that I might become holy. I'm going to cooperate with, this may be a new vocabulary, with the apostolic graces that God gives me. There's a difference between receiving grace for myself as an individual, for my own sanctification, with which I must cooperate. But there's another level of grace, and that is the grace of cooperating with Christ in being a dispenser of His grace to other people. And then in the second week, the concentration is to see what I have to do in my life to cooperate with the grace of Christ to become more holy. Why? So that I might then become a more apt means of grace to others. We're going to bring others to Christ only, that's a revealed effort, only in the measure that we are united with Him ourselves, no more, no less. And of course, in the second week, concentrates on the way Christ cooperated with the grace that the Father gave Him to do what? To extend that kingdom which He came into the world to establish. And the third week is to see the price that Christ paid. And let me tell you, this is mid-Manhattan prices. Having lived in New York for 14 years, the same item in Lower Manhattan, see a woman's dress, $59.95. Women told me this. In Mid Manhattan, that dress, $159 or $199.95. The price we have to pay to cooperate with Christ in the extension of His kingdom is high. And is high partly because of ourselves. Because we have to, sacrifice our own preferences, our own choices. Dear Lord, our own choices. How that word is being, what shall I say, prostituted nowadays. But also and especially, and this is where Christ is our perfect model. The price we have to pay to cooperate with Christ in the extension of His kingdom is not only or even mainly the laziness, the weakness, do you name it, of our fallen human nature. To overcome, get our innate reluctance to work. I'm sure I've given you this definition of work. I like it. Work is that which a person would rather not be doing if he could be doing something else. And for many people in America, they hate what they're doing most of the time. Do you agree? They hate it. Well, that's not the biggest price we have to pay. The biggest price we have to pay is the price that Christ paid. What's that? Our position. What a simple word, our position. And the opposition, as you know, covers the whole gamut of people that we love that will not like what we're doing. And may even be what we're doing or trying to do for them. That's why over the years, our two people, and publicly, as I'm saying now, for me, the great inspiration of Christ's teaching is his eighth beatitude. Remember? Blessed are they who suffer persecution for justice' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Rejoice. And the Greek allows us to say, and dance with joy. When the world persecutes you, hates you, there's all manner of evil against you. That's the way they treated all the prophets, the true prophets of the Old Testament. And I mean this. You better love it. I don't mean you're a masochist or a sadist. Do you like opposition? No. But you're absolutely sure that you must be doing the right thing. Because then, for people that could have no possible grounds for opposing you, and I repeat, what a cheap verb, oppose you. That is why one book I'll never write is my autobiography. Never did I dream. Remember, I told you 1993 is 40 years since I took my last vows as a Jesuit. February the 2nd, 1953. My wildest nightmare. I never even conceived the possibility of the opposition. And from sources and from people, you'd never expect to be opposed. All you have to do, that's all you have to do, is teach the truth. That's all. You're smart in doing it, you're very thoughtful, you watch your vocabulary. Well, the world is going to hate you. Back to the contemplation for obtaining divine love. The third week concentrates on the price we have to pay to extend the kingdom of Christ. I'll be very frank with you. By now, the thousands of people that God has put into my life, but how few, God only knows, as far as I can tell, how few really, really catch the vision. The greatest gift you can receive on earth from God is to be burning with zeal for the extension of Christ's teaching, and then you blink and you're just thrilled and you're being opposed to your efforts. That's marvelous. But you need that kind of experience, otherwise you couldn't carry on. The fourth week then concentrates, as we saw, on Christ's resurrection and risen life, which on earth was very short, to be exact, 40 days. The exact number of days that he spent, this is our Lord, before he began his public ministry. 40 days at the beginning, 40 days after his resurrection. But then St. Ignatius, to put the capstone, as it were, on the exercises, has what he calls the contemplation for divine love. In other words, he wants to make it clear that everything that a person had been meditating on for, in this case, 28 days, makes sense only on one premise, that we are deeply, and that means deeply, in love with God. And again, even as I use these words, I say to myself, oh, no, Harvey. For many people, I hope and I pray, not for you. These are just words. So then, and unexpectedly, in the technical sense, Ignatius was no theologian. Down to earth, to one of the church's greatest mystics. However, he thought he should, for closing the exercises, analyze the meaning of true love. And it comes in 1, 2, 3 parts. Part one is to get to the heart of what love means. Love means giving oneself to, for, and with, and like the one that I claim to love. Now, there's self-giving. And as Ignatius points out, among human beings, we've all read enough literature to know to tell a person, I love you. It's easy. It's cheap. I think I've said, at least on some occasion, wives would show me the love letter they received from their husband before they married. I didn't read them, you know, with careful scrutiny, but dripping with affection. But now, Father, you should see him. Well, I do see him. But I should add, and the husbands are not telling me the same about their wives. Consequently, in a world like ours, their love is almost, you might say, the end word in our culture. Love all over the place. The British writer Lord Acton coined a phrase that I haven't forgotten. 30 years ago, that must have been, that I read it. Oh, liberty, how many crimes are committed in your name? I use this expression, change one word. Oh, love, how many crimes are committed in your name? I hope you agree. The essence of love, therefore, is in deeds, in doing. Doing what? Doing that is the one that we claim to love wants us to do. As if the one whom we are speaking of is God. This is love. Who can finish the sentence? Christ speaking, if you love me, keep my commandments. In God, God become in. Let me tell you, if you want to extend the kingdom of Christ, and you want to do Christ's work, you've got to pay for it. And pay for this by maybe losing. There's no intention on your part. The affection, the friendship, the acceptance, however, by those people who on earth may be, humanly speaking, the dearest people in your life. But, just to make sure we know what we're talking about, this love for God to be shown in our deeds is the inevitable price of wanting to extend the kingdom of Christ. And we could be talking on a better day. I see some green in chapel. Had a doctor's appointment this afternoon. To my left, my penny this shamrock. So I put the shamrock on the lapel of my coat. I didn't think I should keep it on, though. St. Patrick, pay. Do you know? Dearly. He managed to come through, shall I say, alive. He did not die a martyr's death. Every apostle. What happened to Boniface in Germany? One apostle of one country after another. Was he the martyr? Well, he managed to somehow come through alive until, you might say, his normal death time. Met criticism, rejection, opposition. I want to stress this as we come to the close of the exercises. I know it's so, oh dear Lord, it is so real. Do you expect it? I even mean you look forward to it. And you don't have to look for it. It will be provided. That's number one. Number two, how are we to grow in this divine love? It should be the motive force, everything we do for Christ. Ignatius recommends, and this is sheer spiritual genius, he recommends, reflecting on all the good things that God has given me. Now let's be clear. It is not only during the exercises that we are to meditate on God's gifts to us. No. That, my friends, is the first purpose of the daily examen of conscience. And if, when you finish the 30-day exercises, if you have not started the practice of a daily examen of conscience, pardon me, you have not really made the exercises. Gee, I didn't know that. Well, I'm telling you. And go back to see what Jesus has to say about the examens of conscience. And the heart of the daily examen of conscience comes in three parts. Part one is a daily reflection on the blessings, the graces, and the gifts that God has given me the last day for me, last half day. By rule, I'm to make my examen of conscience twice a day and 15 minutes each day. Now, twice 15, 30 minutes a day. Even keep a record. I was dead tired last night. And already turned off the lights and went to bed. Oh, Hardin, how can you be so stupid? I had not put down the record for my daily examen of conscience. So, shall I say, I crawled out of bed and for the 18th of March filled in what I should do every day, an inventory. Well, the first thing is gratitude, second is sorrow. What have I done wrong during the day? In case you don't find anything wrong, then at least not finding anything wrong is wrong. I mean it. I bet people tell me they don't know what they're supposed to say in confession. And I find out they're sane and sober. And then ask for God's mercy for what I've done wrong. And then thirdly, plan. What am I going to do? When? Well, say the next day. Maybe the next half day. I was with the Missionaries of Charity for their seminar. And I figured I better have a few minutes to myself to prepare for our meeting here. So we have the sisters. If we could not finish about 10 minutes earlier than normally. So we got here shortly after 6:30. He may have an hour time to prepare. And I thought about that, made that plan during my exam of conscience. He would jot it down. Back to the gratitude. Every day, in other words, you don't just make the exercises, you live them. Every day, for the rest of your life, every day, reflect, be just for a few minutes, on the grace that God has given you in your last exam of conscience, for which then you thank Him. Because, says Ignatius, and by that he is building on the church's wisdom over the centuries, love feeds on gratitude. Love lives on gratitude. And we've got to daily, and in fact even Ignatius made 7 examines of conscience every day. He was no scrupulous person. So that being constantly conscious of God's goodness, and what will happen is this. Once you get into the habit of looking back at God's benefits during the last day, you're going to see God's benefits during the day in a way in which you had never seen them before. And of course, those graces that God gives us, for which we should thank Him, are not all, would you agree, pleasant. Is there such a thing as painful graces? Of course. No wonder the murderer, Kevorkian, is so popular in the media. People don't want to suffer. You know why? They don't have a reason for suffering. Gratitude is the foundation and model of our love of God. Then, the Sushipe. That's the standard name for that prayer. And as you know, it means take, O Lord, or take. But the Latin is much sharper, much clearer. There are about 5 verbs in Latin for to take. Is no ordinary verb. You have a paragraph explaining just that one verb. It means that we are giving back to God what He's given to us. Take, O Lord, and receive. And notice the first thing, all my liberty. That expression sounds familiar. Title of the book, which this sinner wrote as a theology of the exercise. All my liberty. And the word is all my liberty. My memory, my understanding, and all my real life. My memory. You know how many people waste their time, indeed, can't even sin, by bringing back memories. Memories That should be buried where they belong, in the past. A good memory, I've been telling people, is a memory that can remember what should be remembered and forgets what should be forgotten. Does that make sense? In all my realms,